lurking. He's watching. He's waiting. Welcome to Fatal Flower Presents.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fatal Follower Presents, the Brothers Grimm edition. Welcome back, Travis.
Hey, what's up, man?
It's been a while since we recorded. I think it's been a whole year, actually, since we recorded anything.
Yeah, it's been a long time. 2023 was not kind, and no. There was just a lot going on. So,
yeah, there was. I mean, you know, the way that life works, you know, you're going through peaks and valleys, and sometimes, you know, you're at the peak and sometimes you're at the valley.
So, yeah.
But it was a good year for horror. I don't know if you would agree with that or not.
I actually would not.
Really? Okay. Yeah. This is going to be interesting because I feel like this has been maybe one of the strongest years of the, what is this, the 20s? Is that what we're calling this? 20, 2021, 2022, whatever this is. Whatever void that we're in right now.
Now, I will say there is a preface to me saying that, and I will get to that once we start doing the list.
Oh.
But I haven't seen everything, you know, as, you know.
Sure.
I haven't had time to see everything, so my list is kind of just based on what I have seen. And but yeah, I thought it was a little, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed a lot of stuff. I don't know. We'll see. We'll get to the list and then we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird year because
yeah, it is.
You know, for me, I mean, really, I think it was 2022. I mean, or maybe even 2021 when you had like Malignant out, or even Barbarian, or like those really weird cuts were out.
Yeah.
So this one didn't really have many of those, if not too many.
Yeah, and I look back and like I think 2022 was like Pearl, right? And
yep.
Then before that, you know, even going back to like 2019, 2020, you had The Night House and Possessor before that, and there's just like there wasn't that movie for me, at least for me.
Yeah, it's been weird. It's been a lot of franchise, a lot of like IP stuff that's existed. But yeah, so I'm excited for you and I to go through the 2023 mess of it all.
Yeah.
So what's new with you? Are you still you know, reading, watching horror like crazy, or?
Oh yeah, so I'm not gonna lie. Like I took a little bit of a break there. Like I think like half, like the first half of 2023, I was still reading a lot. But as far as like watching stuff, I would hit like, you know, the theatrical, you know, like big releases and stuff. But a lot of my, and I think you guys will see on my list, it's where like, it's like the Shudder originals and like, you know, the Hulu originals and stuff is kind of where I missed out. And I plan on going back and, you know, like catching up with a lot of that stuff, because I hear a lot of that stuff is really good. But yeah, still reading a lot, still, you know. But horror is always going to be the main source of input into this brain.
Yeah, well, that's what we like to hear. Well, for 2023, I'll give you the top five listeners, top five highest grossing horror movies, and they were kind of some surprises in there. I think the number one being Five Nights at Freddy's. That was the highest grossing horror movie of 2023 that simultaneously dropped on Peacock the same day, which is very, very cool because it does reinforce the idea of theatrical horror experiences, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no matter if you're a fan of the games, I've played the games. The games are pretty creepy.
Yeah, the games are really scary.
The games are really scary. The movie is more of an entryway if you're like into like Gremlin or Goonies. Like it's more of that style. It's what I would like introduce like my, you know, youngsters in my life. Mm-hmm. Although I enjoy it because I like the characters. But highest grossing movie of the year for horror, really big. So hopefully that same date streaming kind of goes away because I want to see the theatrical experience you know, reemphasized, I guess, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Tired of the streaming. So that was number one. The second one was Scream 6. Scream 6 made a boatload of money. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Scream 7. I mean, there's a lot of talk of, you know, the controversies behind it, things like that. But it seems like the Scream movies are bringing in the crowds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it was highly entertaining.
It'll be interesting. Yeah, like you said, it'll be interesting because they lost the directors now, and they lost what's her name, Jenna Ortega, and I think the second lead too, didn't they?
Yeah, Melissa Barrera. Yeah,
both. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where kind of that franchise goes. I'm of the mind though, and I don't know if listeners agree with this or if you agree with this. Like, I don't really care where it's set or like what's really going on. Like, as long as Ghostface is in it, like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't care who the star is, really.
No.
I really don't care. It doesn't really matter to me.
No, I mean, really, the biggest, I think, sad news for me is I wanted to see Christopher Landon direct it, because I love Christopher Landon's movies for the most part.
Yeah.
I think he has that Wes Craven, that feel for his movies. I mean, if you've seen the Happy Death Day movies or Freaky, there is a little that meta slasher comedy that he has in his movies. And, you know, that's a direct love letter to Wes Craven.
Yeah.
So I think he would have been a perfect fit, but I'm like you, as long as there's a Ghostface in it, it's not the same Ghostface. So we know that. So they can do a lot with that movie franchise. So I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Scream 6 was also the perfect ending for that story.
Yeah, it really was. It's like you could go on a cruise, you could do anything with those movies and it'd be killer, man.
Well, to be honest, like the thread throughout all of the movies has been Gail, and I don't she's in it again. Like, she should be the lead,
because she
is, you know, that detective type in those movies, and you know, so. But that was the second grossest. The third one was Megan started January of 2023, pretty high for a January horror movie. So I know I introduced you to that when I was up in February last year.
Oh yeah.
So that was cool to see that was one of the higher grossing movies. The Nun 2, I don't know if you checked out The Nun 2.
One of those that I didn't catch, but yeah, those movies always make bank, man. And that's interesting that I wonder if 2024 will see kind of a, you know, like the big news right now is like kind of the superhero fatigue and stuff like that. I wonder if people will start getting like franchise fatigue.
Yeah, I mean, it could definitely happen. And honestly, I thought that Scream 6 and even The Nun 2 and the next one, the fifth highest grossing, Insidious, that these movies were not going to do well because of that, like, franchise kind of fatigue. I mean, Scream 6, right? And then Insidious, that's the fifth movie in that franchise, and it did the best out of all of them.
Yeah.
As well as Scream 6. I mean, it did, you know, did the best out of, I think, the whole franchise, maybe. I don't know if it's worldwide or not, but I could see that, though. I could see more original content.
And then you had, Saw X or Saw 10, however you want to say it. Like, that probably was very close after that, like probably 6 or 7 as far as like top grossing. So it's like,
yeah, it was a top.
You had a 10th movie in a series out, you know. I feel like people like kind of like brought that one back kind of with like open arms. It's almost like nostalgic now to especially like my, like, because especially like people my age, I think, like, because Saw came out when I was like in 7th or 8th grade.
Yeah.
I think. And it's like, you know, they made a movie every damn year until I was in college, you know?
Yeah. It's like one of those things that it is a perfect time capsule of those types of movies then.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think we discussed this later in previous episodes, but I don't think either of us were really as much into those movies. And after the time has passed, I myself personally have grown to kind of appreciate like the audacity of the story in those.
Yeah.
And you know, I loved Saw 10. I don't know if we're going to talk about it much more, but I thought the story was interesting, and I was surprised at how well it was received with critics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, I mean, that was that those top five, and you know, there was Exorcist Believer was on there for one of the tops. Saw X, like you said, Thanksgiving was up there too. Like there was Evil Dead Rise was on the list. A lot of big, big movies, big franchise sequels. But yeah, that was the 2023 in a nutshell.
I think to like put a bow on the box office stuff, I think if 2023, if anything was like true as far as like film and cinema goes, like as far as box office and like movie theaters and stuff, I think it's that horror still reigns supreme as far as like cost versus like, you know, like, I mean, cost of budget versus the money that it brings in, because it's like, I think that as far as, and I mentioned it once before, but like the superhero genre and stuff, it's like there were a few like bombs this year as far as, I mean, like seriously, and say what you will about the movies, like whether people liked them or not, it was like, I think people are just kind of tired of, and studios should be like a little bit more hesitant to drop like $250 million into a movie. When you can make a, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's or like a Scream 6, and those movies probably cost like nothing. Probably $30 million or $35 million. I don't know how much, you know, budget wise, but like in raked in money.
Well, like Five Nights, I was reading when it had the gross, it cost like $15 million to make.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
And it made more than Shazam, Flash, The Marvels. Whatever, I don't know, I may have even made as much as Ant-Man and the Wasp, like, and those movies, like you said, 200 million or more for those.
Probably 2 billion between all those, like, right. In production costs. Yeah,
I mean, and it's insane, and I'm curious to see, and there's not a lot of superhero movies coming out in 2024. There's no really Marvel movies. Uh-huh. So I'm curious to see what the big ones are going to be. I mean, we had Oppenheimer, which was huge. Barbie was huge. Those are, you know, I mean, Barbie, they're both kind of existing ideas, but they were movies that were sort of wholly original in how they were presented. So I'll be curious to see what the big ones will be for this year. And, you know, this is an election year too. So what movies are going to tie into that kind of that idea? Yeah. Got one movie coming out called Civil War from the director of I'm trying to think of his name, the sci-fi director.
Alex Garland.
Yeah, Alex Garland. So I'm curious to see, you know, will a lot of the political type of movies and the biopics that are normally out during election seasons, will people pass on those because it's already in your mind? Mm-hmm. It'd be cool to see. So we're starting the year off. I had you watch a few trailers. Mm-hmm. So this, by the time we're recording this, this will already be out by the time the listeners hear it. But it's Night Swim, and this is coming from the James Wan, right? So James Wan, he's already created this movie studio from the success of The Conjuring, and this is the first movie that he is kind of debuting with the director from his partnership or whatever. He said that in interviews, he watched this short that the director did, and he was super impressed, and he wanted to get this movie out there for people to check it out. What did you think of the trailer?
So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a standard, like, Blumhouse trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, Blumhouse is kind of like, I guess I'm kind of getting fatigue as far as like fatigue may be like the word of the show, but I guess like I Blumhouse is kind of like on and off again for me. Like, yeah, we kind of have a complicated, like, it's like that Facebook update of like your relationship where it's like, it's just complicated.
Right.
Cause like, I like some of the shit they do, and then some of the shit is just like, so like, yawn to me. Like, I'm like, man, I want them to do like original shit.
Right.
But the Night Swim, I think, out of the trailers that you, and not to bury the lead or anything, but out of the trailers that you sent me, I think Night Swim does have the opportunity to make like a pretty good amount of money, because I was thinking about, like, I was like scrolling through some of the comments on YouTube and stuff. on the trailer, and it's like, it is kind of a fear that a lot of people have, and like one that I have in particular is like swimming at night, like especially, and it can be like kind of creepy, like even if you have an above ground pool and you're like in the backyard and it's like all dark, you know, dark skies and stuff.
Yeah,
there's something about like the shadows and the water and shit like that that's like kind of creepy and kind of feels like otherworldly. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's even in the daytime, or even if you're in a brightly lit place and you're alone, like I used to swim alone on my lunch break at this job I had, and I would go there, swim for an hour and be done. But there's something eerie about bodies of water in general to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the grate at the bottom of the pool and you're like, is it going to suck me in like that Final Destination kill? Like,
yeah.
You're alone, you could drown. Like there's all kinds of things. So I think it definitely has that idea that's ripe for exploitation. The trailer does look a little generic. I think the trailer I sent you was actually the second one, which does show some practical effects and stuff in there, which I'm all in for. But yeah, I'm curious to see what it'd be. We're going to check it out. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. It could be a big one or it could be a dud. But I think the fun thing about it is, I don't know if they have these types of showings where you're at, but because you're in Indiana, I'm in New York, but they have 4DX here. And I don't know if you've 4DX, but they do like the smells, they do the water splash in the mist, and your seat moves. So that could be a fun movie to check out just for that gimmick alone.
Mm-hmm. That'd be killer. Somebody just like sets up over your seat and throws water in your face.
Have you ever done the 4DX?
No, I haven't.
So we did it for Jungle Cruise because I knew it was going to be fun because you're on a, you know, the movie's in a boat and it's water, obviously, right? So
yeah,
we did it and it was fun because the smells of the flowers, they would like do certain things. And I mean, you shouldn't do it in the wintertime, right? Because you're out kind of damp. but it's cool. So I don't know. I was telling my husband Gabe, I was like, maybe we should do that 4DX just so that if the movie sucks, at least we had a fun experience, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's that one. That one to be out. So we'll see how the reviews are for that one. It could be interesting to see. So the next one I showed you was Founders Day, and Founders Day is trying to. I think the marketing's been good for this because it's coming hot off of the success of Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And it's like that holiday horror is ripe because there was Thanksgiving and then Shudder put out It's a Wonderful Knife as well. You know, holiday horror, Christmas horror. And that did really well in theaters. And it was only for 2 weeks, limited. And then you have this one that's another holiday horror. And holiday horror is probably my favorite type of slasher. But Founders Day, you know, it's set on the backdrop of a heated mayor election. And then you have this masked killer, which looks like the founding father who has a gavel that also has a knife on the other side of it. So it's kind of gimmicky weapon, kind of iconic looking, but it looks like that holiday revenge type of slasher movie. But what did you think of this trailer? This will be out on January 19th.
So this one will be one that I'll probably check out. Like, I don't know, man. I'm like in for all these slasher movies, really. Like, it doesn't, like, as we're talking, like, the Vinegar Syndrome sale is going on right now, like the New Year sale. So hop in there and check all that out. But, like, there's, like, the cheesier the better with these slasher movies. So, yeah. Like, a slasher movie has to be really, really bad and miss the mark for me not to like it. So it's like, this one has all the, you know, like all the things that you want to see in a slasher movie in the trailer. Like you said, the part with the gal actually made me laugh out loud, like when I saw it, because it's like it is like ridiculous and shit. It made me kind of think of like Graduation Day, or like the trailer for like Fatal Games, when the killers are like using like things that is like totally impractical to kill somebody, kill lots of people with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it still works for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, I think it'll be fun. Like you were saying, I think we could have a little slasher renaissance on our hands.
Yeah, there's been a quite a bit of slasher movies out this past year. And so this is one that, you know, I think I heard another listener that I was talking to she said that sometimes movies become my personality until I watch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like this, the poster for this one's like on my phone and I like watch the trailer and I'm like, ooh, you know, what does the merchandise look like? Like that is my personality with when slasher movies get announced. I'm like that with like Chucky movies or series or like anything that comes out. Like even when Thanksgiving came out, I was like, ooh, I need to find a figure to buy, or, you know, mm-hmm. just those kinds of movies that, you know, I love slasher just like you. And I think that's the bread and butter of what I watch, right? It's the comfort of that. So yeah, that one's a total theatrical watch for me too. All right, so you got another Blumhouse one here called Imaginary on March 8th. It's hard to think of March 8th already, but it'd be here before you know it.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, like, yeah, this one is, I'm not sure about this one. Like, that is a cool idea, though, to, like, do an imaginary friend kind of thing. But,
yeah.
And Blumhouse kind of, like I said, it always, like, intrigues me and stuff because they have put out some good stuff. And it could make money, like, you know, the idea of like the teddy bear and shit and having like an imaginary friend being attached in the teddy bear or something like that.
Yeah.
Is what I picked up from the trailer. I don't know. It could be pretty spooky, man. I think they're looking for like their next, like, not next Megan, but like, I appreciate that they're doing, like, they're trying to start up like new tentpoles and not just like kind of put out, you know, franchises and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, the teddy bear is a cool idea. I love the end of the trailer where you get to see the teddy bear.
Yeah.
And I also like that abstract kind of world that it looks like they're going into. Like, you know, growing up on Nightmare on Elm Street, like we mm-hmm. watch movies and you see that surreal, like, or even Hellraiser, like you see those surreal scapes of horror, whether they're in, you know, the configuration box or whether they're in nightmare worlds or whatever. So that had that aspect to it. So I was like, ooh, I'm kind of intrigued by being brought into the imaginary whatever world. But yeah, so it looks like it could be one of those that could be the next sort of make something, but original kind of mm-hmm. thing. But yeah, I think it'd be cool. I'll check it out. All right, so the last one, this one's cracking me up because it's called Mickey's Mousetrap. And as of January 1st, which kind of looks like when they started filming this movie, this is going to be out in March of this year as well. And it's Steamboat Willie is the first version of Mickey Mouse who went into public domain. And you know when things go into public domain, for example, like Night of the Living Dead, famously, yeah. you know, in public domain, it's always in horror movies or any movie that people are watching, all that stuff. But this, like Winnie the Pooh, is now in public domain and someone has already made a slasher of it. You know, kudos to this person. Yeah. But what did you think of this trailer?
So I didn't get like where it was set. Where was the setting? Were they at, like, a theme park or?
Yeah, it looked like, I think the description for it was after hours at a birthday party, a 21st birthday party, like in one of those arcade places. Mm-hmm. So it looks like a Dave and Buster's. It's probably where it was filmed.
So yeah, it was filmed at a Chuck E. Cheese without their knowledge.
Right.
No, I think what could have been interesting though is if someone filmed, and you would have never really, like, you would have had to have like a bigger budget to do this, but like Steamboat yeah. Willie, like going after a Disney park and slashing right. like people dressed as Mickey Mouse or some shit, that would have been killer. I would have been so down for that. But yeah, man, yeah. I mean, I don't know, like, did you ever see the Winnie the Pooh?
As I look at the Blu-ray on my shelf.
Yeah, I was about yes. to say, as it's in your top five, probably.
as I debated getting the Steelbook version.
Yeah, I don't know about the characters like that. I mean, I think some of them could be cool. Also the Grinch, right? Didn't they release like a Grinch one, the mean one or something?
Yep. That one was fun. That one actually is funner than the Winnie the Pooh one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the guy, David Thornton from Terrifier, he plays the mean one in this one. And you can tell he's still a little bit Art the Clown. Uh-huh. But yeah, that one is fun. That one is probably one that you should definitely check out. Winnie the Pooh, I don't think it's as bad as everybody says it is.
Yeah.
It's not memorable. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? like it is a very much like if you went to the video store at Blockbuster, like pretend you're like 10 years old again, you're going to Blockbuster and you see the cover, you pick it up, you watch it, and you're like, oh, this is trash, but you're a kid, you know what I mean? So yeah. So that's kind of what it feels like. Like it's enjoyed by people that don't care about characters or anything. Like, <Yeah. laughs> but it's pretty fun. It's got some good blood in it. It's a straight up just cheap slasher, really. Like it's Christopher Robin is in the movie and he's basically getting owned in the movie by Winnie the Pooh because he abandoned them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they cannibalized a couple members of the other Winnie the Pooh. And they're wearing masks, but they're supposed to be believed as hybrids. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So they're kind of mutants.
Oh, my God.
So you might like it, actually. Yeah. It'd probably be up 2023 if you watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it is an interesting idea, I guess. Like, I'd have to look at like characters that are going into public domain and shit, like, yeah. And what you could make a slasher, like maybe like the shadow might be like a creepy slasher. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's it's ripe for, you know, making, and you can't really like, I mean, you can't fault them. Right. Like, I mean, this is something.
Oh, no.
Gonna go viral, and they're gonna probably it'll drop in theaters. I mean, just like the Winnie the Pooh movie, like it dropped in theaters. I didn't go see it in theaters, but I mean, it did really well. Mm-hmm. It made quadruple its money. So, but yeah, I mean, it's gonna be coming out soon. So, and then as I was sending you that trailer, the guy that directed the mean one is directing the other. Steamboat Willie version of Mickey Mouse. It's a horror movie that is actually set on a cruise.
I think I did see that one. I think I saw like a poster or something.
Yeah. So that was just announced too. All this. So we'll see which one comes out on the top. But I mean, that was what we have coming up. There will be some more, you know, coming out, but what are you looking forward to before we get into our 2023 list? What are you looking forward to in 2024? Is there anything that you've read that you've, other than these, that stand out to you that you're looking forward to?
Oh yeah. So obviously I think the biggest one for me is Nosferatu by Robert Eggers.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, I dig all of his shit, man. And like it, that movie's probably going to be amazing. Terrifier 3, of course, I believe that's supposed to be out. I also had a question for you, like, and it has to do with an existing series. Yeah. So, and this is kind of for the listeners as well. Like, so 2024 is going to be the 40th anniversary of A Nightmare on Elm Street. The first one that came out. So I'm hoping that someone is either, and this kind of has to do with like physical media too, but it can also go into like an announcement of a new movie or something. I'm hoping that someone has something planned for a new series, or I know there's been rumblings of like a television series and stuff.
Yeah.
Or a freaking box set, like a 4K box set or a Blu-ray box set. It's like, dude, you got to do something. Like, don't they have to bring us something for the 40th anniversary?
Yeah, usually the big anniversary is when it's like the decade, like even number. They usually do that because, I mean, they did that with Friday the 13th. I have the poster for the 40th anniversary on my wall for that. And that's when Scream Factory did their Friday the 13th one. So I'm more than sure you're on the right track with definitely a physical media release. Honestly, I wouldn't mind. There was a fan film called Dylan's Nightmare or something that came out, and I watched it. And the guy that plays Freddy in that, he did, I think with the right direction for him, like coaching and stuff, I think he could really nail a new Freddy, because he's a very good Robert Englund Freddy type of sinister, like maybe part two Freddy.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I was going to fan cast anybody, it would be that dude. He did an amazing job. Definitely check it out. And just to see for his performance, because he does a really good job in that.
And for all the collectors, I know there's a good amount of collectors like listening to this and stuff, you know, like David James and, you know, just to name a few, but it's like the Nightmare on Elm Street series is like the only series really that I can think of that like constantly gets shit on, like as far as like physical releases.
Yeah.
Like the only Blu-ray packaging that we've gotten is that one shitty one that was like in Walmart's, right? Like the didn't they even share a disc?
Yeah, what? It's like
Dude.
Yeah, I think it's only like there's a couple discs that have the same like two movies on one disc or something. Yeah, it's the collection, but it's not all of it.
It's really mind-boggling though, because it's like that would almost be a no-brainer, like to get together and put together a box set for that, because it's like that's a lot of people's like favorite series ever, like, you know, as far as like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween, like shit. But yeah, man, that like I've been thinking about that, and I'm like, they gotta like bring us something for that series, dude.
Well, and Hellraiser and Child's Play are on their second new box sets.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah, it's definitely time for that. It's definitely time for some Nightmare on Elm Street love. And it could be right. It could be a couple things there. But, I'm down for a new movie. I mean, with the way that the slasher movies are doing so well in theaters, it would be the obvious choice to put another really big main slasher character out there to see how it will do.
Well, and yeah, we had talked about the slasher renaissance. I mean, Art the Clown, dude. Like, Art the Clown's pretty huge. I mean, they have his shirts at Spirit Halloween, Hot Topic. Like, I saw his shirts at Spencer's and shit. Like, people really love that character.
Yeah, and then we're going to get a new whole new franchise with John Carver as Thanksgiving 2 was announced. So I'm on board. All right, so let's rewind back in time to 2023. All right, you got your list ready, bub?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll.
All right, so why don't you kick it off with your number 5?
Okay, so I said I had a preface, like, just before I get into my list, because I don't want any, like, brutal horror fans going after me. movies that I've, like, wanted to see, but I just haven't got a chance to check it out. You know, work's been crazy, life's been crazy. When Evil Lurks, I saw that top a lot of people's lists. I've heard it's fucking amazing. Just one that I haven't checked out. Bo is Afraid, Ari Aster, that's kind of like a quasi horror film. I saw it on a few lists though. No One Will Save You, I couldn't in good conscience put this one on my list because I've only seen like half of it. I'm in the process of watching it. And Godzilla Minus One. So, you know, those are ones that I haven't seen that, you know, would maybe change my list or whatever, but I just, for whatever reason, I just have not checked them out. So I had to come out and kind of say that, because it's not really a best of list. It's kind of like my favorite list, you know, of what I've seen this year. But to kick it off, I had to start with a reliable franchise that I thought needed a little pick me up. And that was Scream 6. So number 5 would be Scream 6 for me. Directed, of course, by Matt Bentinelli and Tyler Gillette. Just a little synopsis. In the next installment, the survivors of the Ghostface killings leaves Woodsboro behind and start a fresh chapter in New York City. I felt like this earned a spot on my list because I am getting a little bit tired of the franchise entries, you know, after all the Halloween movies that we got and stuff like that. Even though I enjoyed them, like, I was getting a little bit tired. I feel like that Scream 5 had gotten a little stale. Like, I feel like I could see the cracks and shit. This one landed very strongly for me. Like, I felt like that it was the boost that the franchise needed. I saw a lot of people hating on this, and I didn't really understand why. I thought this one was the goriest one since probably the fourth one.
Yeah.
And I felt like some of the kills were just mean-spirited, like, and I dug that.
Yeah.
You know, I dig when Ghostface kind of, you know, goes for, you know, like just outright gore and shit. But yeah, I dug the setting, like, you know, the subway scene in particular. I felt like, you know, it was just setting up like some really cool stuff that we hadn't seen Ghostface 2 when he was in, you know, Southern California or whatever Woodsboro is, and just putting him in different settings and stuff. It kind of brought you that idea too, like at the beginning, when that woman is in the alleyway of New York, and it's kind of like, yeah, like there are dark corners like everywhere, and Ghostface could be anywhere really, even in New York. He could come and get you in New York. Even it's the city that never sleeps, or, you know, the city of bright lights or whatever, and Ghostface is still killing motherfuckers and, you know, in their apartments and
right
shit like that. But I, that movie really landed for me. And this list was pretty hard to put together, but I couldn't keep that one off. I felt like I enjoyed that one enough.
Yeah. It's not on my list, but it's one of the ones that I had to take off because I knew that there were others that I mean, this one I've seen it like three times already. Mm-hmm. But I heavily enjoyed it. But I think where part five did so well for me with like the reveal of the motive. I love the cleverness of the motive for Scream 5, but I think Scream 6 is the meat and potatoes of what I want in a slasher movie. Like you said, you know, Ghostface can be anywhere. And in New York, like, you know, Jason goes to Manhattan, like you can attack, like in the city, even though you're around so many people, you can kind of feel isolated sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things happen in front of people all the time in New York, and it's just people just keep walking or minding their own business.
Dude, the scene, this is kind of going along with what you're saying, but like the scene in the convenience store was like fucking awesome, because he's like, and I saw people shitting on that too, the fact that he's like using a gun.
Right.
And I'm like, this motherfucker is like out for revenge. Like he just wants you dead.
Yeah, it made it more like cold and like calculating, like he's not really playing as much as he wants to take you out. And I dug all of the set pieces. I think they got back to, and I know that part five they had like quarantine issues with like, you know, COVID or whatever, but this one seemed like there was more joy in the chase scenes and and I love the ladder scene and like all those, even the big scene at the end, like it's really cool in the movie house. I thought that I love that movie. I think 5 and 6 are so strong for me in the franchise. I don't know why people hated on it either. I mean, I think it was highly entertaining. I think where Scream 5 is ultimately like the remake in a way,
mm-hmm,
of the first movie, this one is sort of the remake of the second movie. And I think it kind of is spiritual. You know what I mean? Like that's, mm-hmm, sequel to part two because of how Scream 2 is highly entertaining and the set pieces. And, you know, like I dug it. I love it. Well, this is going to be complimentary to yours in a way, your five. So five for me, my fifth one, this was a hard list because initially I had like 11 on my list.
Yeah. I had to cut mine down quite a bit too.
Yeah, this one I thought, one, because it's co-written by Kevin Williamson. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's called Sick.
Yeah.
You did? Okay. So this one, I thought, I had to check to see even when it came out, but it did come out last January. It was direct to Peacock, which is strange because, mm-hmm, it could have done really well in a theater. But essentially, it's right at the start of the pandemic. So this is 2020 set. It's a home invasion movie. It's about this character and her best friend. They decide to quarantine alone. Someone pops up that they weren't unexpected. And, you know, during COVID, you don't want people just popping up at wherever you're quarantining, right? And then they're actually not alone because there's a home invasion aspect to it. I think what I liked so much about this movie is because it was, in a sense, original to the time period of, you know, the whole beginning of this movie. You're seeing the character in the grocery store and you're seeing how people are acting. And it just is a perfect time capsule for that time period. And also, I like that there's the pandemic element that you're afraid of people coming into your house, and then there's the actual home invasion element that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty clever. And you could tell Kevin Williamson had some of the cleverness to, you know, the plot and the reveal and what was happening. I did like the motivations of the killers in this one. I thought it made sense. And I think it got back to having those long slasher chase sequences, and this one has probably one of my favorites of last year. It had a really good chase sequence. I mean, this chick is like, not only is she like going through the house and like going through all this like these woods, but she's like on a raft and shit. Like she's like you know, Christopher Columbus in this shit. So trying to get away from the killer, and I thought it was pretty cool. But I liked it, and I thought it would be one that I think, you know, definitely deserves a little bit more love. But what did you think of this one?
So this one, yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I was going to say, like, for me, it was like the perfect movie for to kind of wrap up the COVID times, because like you were saying, the idea of like the home invasion and like slasher is like the invasion of privacy, and like you're not safe anywhere you go, and this group of kids like go out to this cabin because of COVID, and it's almost like you don't want anybody around because of that, but also like killers obviously violate your fucking space and home, and like that's why it's so fucking like unnerving for that, to think that somebody could come into your like safe space and, you know, violate you, or what, you know, violate your safe space. And it was a really cool like play on that, that, like you said, that time period and the slasher film itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really cool, like there was some dual layered kind of stuff going on there, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to spoil the reveal or the ending, but I do like the ending and the motivations, because it does take it back to that, that classic revenge tale, that revenge motivator for a slasher movie. And, you know, like you got prom night, and you got, you know, there's something always happens, or even graduation day, you know, something happens, someone's out for revenge, but why or who is it? And those are always the ones that I like, because when it's revealed what's happening and you get those kind of campy performances and things like that, I always think that's kind of fun. And this one, it is sort of, you know, got that Scream kind of vibe to it, that 90s slasher kind of thing, which you're kind of seeing a lot more of lately. So I think that was pretty fun. But so that was my number five. So what do you got for your number four?
All right. Number four, I got to go with Megan. Directed by Gerard Johnston. Of course, synopsis: a robotics engineer at a toy company builds a lifelike doll that begins to take on a life of its own. So, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, you actually introduced this to me, and I was like a late comer to this movie, because I think this movie came out in January, like January 6th, I think, is when it came to theaters. And I did not want to like this. Like, there's a reason why I didn't want to go see it in theaters and shit. I don't typically like this kind of horror per se. Like, I like a little bit like darker stuff and shit, as you know.
Yeah.
But like, it's just like, it's impossible to not like not have a smile on your face and shit when you're watching this movie, because there's so much clever shit that they do, and like the awesome writing. We watched this with producer Kate recently, and like, it was just fucking like, just rewatching all like the moments in this movie, and the kills are pretty brutal, but like, it was a scene when the kid is going to bed, and what does she start singing? Like, Megan starts singing the Britney Spears song, right?
Oh, the Sia.
Or no, the Rihanna song, right?
Yeah, Titanic.
Yeah, dude, it was like, but it's just like, it's so fucking brilliant. Like, we're talking about like trying to create new franchises instead of going back to old ones. And I feel like that they did that with Megan, like, you know, creating like essentially a, like an alternate Chucky, like, you know, with this doll that like has her own sass and her own personality. And I just felt like it was a very smart movie, smartly written, like very, like a horror comedy. But yeah, I was like, I didn't want to, like, I in no way imagined myself putting this on my list. Like, when, you know, I heard that it was coming out and stuff, but after seeing it like a couple times, it was like, it deserves to be up there.
I'm actually quite surprised it's on your list. And I could tell that when we watched it, you enjoyed it. And this is actually my number four as well. So
nice.
I'll just talk about it with you. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ingredients there that I think worked for it. Obviously, Akila Cooper, who wrote Malignant, had me on because you're like, is it going to have that weird, like, bombastic style of, like, campiness to it? And it did, which I appreciate in horror movies. But it didn't do it in a way that was, like, kind of silly. You know what I mean? Like, there's campy, and then there's, like, silly that it's not even fun. You know what I mean? But this one had, like, the smart story, and it had, if you watch the unrated cut, it does have a little bit bloodier and brutal kind of kills. But really, you know, the main selling point is the Megan doll and the sassiness, like you mentioned, and the interaction, even the ending that you kind of knew was coming, but you weren't expecting that to happen quite like that. I appreciated that. It kind of took me back to the Child's Play 2 movie, because in a way it has a lot of those elements that you like from Child's Play 2. You like the interactions with Andy and Chucky, and this one it's Megan and the little girl, and then the ending in the toy factory, and the ending with fighting a giant, you know, robot. Like, that kind of idea I think fit the movie. But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was cool. I'm interested to see where they'll take it, considering the last scene in the movie, where it could go. And, you know, AI is the conversation that's happening all over the place now. So this is a good movie to exploit that fear, because that does creep me out a little bit. The AI aspects to the story. Yeah, so that was my number four as well. Do you want to go ahead and go with your number three?
All right. Number three is a film out of Australia, I believe, called Talk to Me. And I believe it's another Blumhouse picture, right?
A24.
A24, that's right. Okay, so directed by Danny and Michael Filippo, I believe is how you say it. So when a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on a new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. So this one was one that I had heard good things about, and we mentioned it earlier, the power of theater and, you know, actually going out and seeing a horror movie. And this was one of the, like, the earlier ones that I think I went to the theaters to see, you know, and not just checking it out streaming. Yeah. At least this year. And Rose and I really didn't know anything about it, and I just saw that it had pretty positive reviews, and I was pretty blown away, like, at some of the ideas in this movie and the performances in this movie. It's like, it's a cool take on exorcism. It's not like your paint by numbers kind of shit, like, you know, like we got in one of the big franchises releases this year. It's not really my thing to bag on movies, but, you know, you could probably figure out what I'm talking about. even though I liked Exorcist Believer, like, it was just kind of the same old shit, you know, like, that we had been shown, you know, hundreds of times before. Whereas this was a fresh spin and a fresh idea, and, like, you can really see it happening in today's world, like, with the YouTube and the TikTok and, like, the Twitch generation and stuff, where they find this fucking creepy hand and no one knows where it came from, and, like, it almost spins on that urban legend kind of thing about it, where these kids are just, like, using it and almost getting, like, a high off of it, like, almost, would you say, and because they're, like, you know, traveling to kind of another place and meeting someone who is, it's been a while since I've seen it, someone who is dead, correct? Or, like, is that how the mythology works? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's kind of got that, like, exorcism, like, tropes, and, like, the Ouija board movie.
Yeah.
Like, you don't leave, you can't leave a certain aspect of the seance, or something will carry over with you. And I think that's kind of what happened in the movie. with the character, because someone dead in her past sort of starts to haunt her in her real life, which kind of makes her like an addict for wanting to talk to it more, which I don't know about you, but I think that could be something that could be easily exploited in somebody that's isolated and alone and doesn't really feel like they're part of anyone, you know? And I think that's the character we see is, her being vulnerable and then her wanting to talk to her mom, right? And that, I think that's what worked about the movie, is that idea of like being haunted by someone you love and not actually being that person. That's kind of creepy.
Well, and it also, like, in spoilers for Exorcist Believer, but it's like, the reason she wants to contact her mom in this one is because she wants to ask her a question, like primarily like how she died and like why, you know, why she died, what were the circumstances behind her dying. And it's like, whereas in Exorcist Believer, it's kind of like, you don't really get a whole lot of that from what I remember.
No.
And you're just like, oh, okay, these two girls are in the forest, like fucking playing with a Ouija board or a penchant or whatever. So you kind of felt for that character too, but you knew also that she was like going off the rails. And you see that slowly kind of like taking over her, and like the scene where, spoiler alert, like if you haven't seen this movie, the scene where it, what I think they say, they set it up earlier in the film and they're like, oh, it likes you or something, or to the little brother.
Yeah.
And the little brother fucking does it and gets fucked up.
Yeah.
And like, he's in the hospital and stuff. They're trying to save him. And I really, really enjoyed, I dig that movies like give you a little taste of something and not just like totally immerse you and like and throw you and show you everything. But like, you see kind of, it reminded me kind of Society, like where you see where he really is. Like, yeah. or like what is really happening to him, like in hell or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like people kind of slathering all over him and like they're crawling everywhere. And like, it is just like a really cool visualization of, you know, hell and like the other, you know, that the other place where they're, you know, where he's trapped. I felt like that was a cool touch, and like a touch that like a foreign filmmakers, foreign writers would think to go there, whereas like, you know, American movies sometimes kind of lack that originality or creativity.
Yeah, I think that you can tell that we're brothers in so many ways, and then where we diverge.
Okay.
So when you mentioned that you like that they didn't show you all of it, that was the one gripe I had with this movie.
Uh-huh.
I'm a nerd where I will read the Fangoria, watch all the fucking making ofs, like on some of this shit, and then I'll go see it. And I'm like, why did I blink and miss it? And I think that was the problem I had with Exorcist Believer, because all those practical effects, you don't even see it. And I think with Talk to Me, it was like, I have the, I think it's the Fangoria and the Rue Morgue. It shows like all of the stuff like you get to see at the end of Talk to Me with like the ghoul in the wheelchair and like mom in the whatever scenes, and even in the hell scenes. And I'm like, man, I really wanted like to see that a little bit longer of that. Like I wanted to like see more of it. Mm-hmm. But I can't fault that for the movie, because Talk to Me is a good movie. Whereas Exorcist Believer, I don't know if that would have saved the movie, me being able to see like the big titty demon that they had.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I was like, I don't know why they cut that though. Yeah, so we're referencing like, if you haven't seen it, Google it. But it's like a, I can't remember what the makeup's got. It's a famous makeup guy, but he created like the fucking demon.
Yeah, I think he was from, I believe he was from Face Off. He was one of the winners, I believe, or maybe I'm confusing that with the Talk to Me guy. But yeah, it was like a winged, a woman, a female winged demon kind of thing, right? Like a gray, like,
yeah,
like hag kind of thing. Yeah, I, you know, that one, if they would have shown that in Exorcist Believer, I probably would like own it.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, and see, they cut that shit to make it seem like it was Who was the exorcist? Who was the demon? And God damn it, I'm blanking on his name. An exorcist.
Pazuzu.
Yeah, Pazuzu. So they cut that shit just to make it seem like it was Pazuzu, but it actually wasn't. It was the demon that like takes babies or kills the mother for the baby.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, why the fuck would you cut that? Because that's integral to the plot.
I still don't even know if I even understand kind of what. It's like there was so much missing from that one, and then there was so much that was put in that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I mean, but it's cool to compare the two, because whereas Talk to Me didn't have that big budget and it didn't have a franchise attached to it, and you've seen like the originality in it. And even though some of those keys and tropes were there, they were just kind of twisted a little bit to make it more wholly unique. And it was hugely successful too. And they're going to do another one, which, you know, I'm on board for. I want to see more of that Talk to Me lore. I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could go a lot of places, but yeah, I mean, that's a really good pick. I didn't have it on my list, but I knew we were going to talk about it, because it's definitely one of those that should be on everyone's radar. I seen it at the theater, and I was a little let down, but then I watched it again and I was like, no, this is a really good movie. It's just, I think my expectations were way high from the hype. And it's always bad to go in with that mindset, because everything, you know how we are. If we go see Halloween Ends and we're hyped up, and then you're leaving the theater or whatever, and you're like, oh, that sucked. But really it didn't, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, that's a good one. I don't know if you've seen this one. So number three for me is Cobweb. Have you seen that one?
I have not. No, that's another one that I hadn't checked out.
Okay. So this one is about, I'll just read the little short synopsis. Peter is plagued by a mysterious constant noise from the inside of his bedroom wall, a tapping that his parents insist is his imagination. As the fear intensifies, he starts to believe his parents are hiding a terrible and dangerous secret. So this one was in theaters limited, but it's you can watch it now on like Hulu, I think it is. It was funny because when it got released, people were actually talking about how good of a movie it was. Why didn't it get a larger release during Halloween, because it's set on Halloween and it very much captures that spirit. And it's unfortunate, because it is a fun movie, and I think it's the two performances in the movie from Homelander, that guy, and from Lizzie Kaplan, who she played Annie Wilkes' version in Castle Rock, and she's been in a couple other like thrillers, but those two actors are always villainous, and they always play a really good job of doing those kind of like creepy kind of resting face kind of vibes. But this one does a lot in the short amount of time. It has whatever's tapping, and then it has the two parents, which you're trying to figure out what's happening, that are acting very, very creepy and strange. And it sort of, their performances in the movie sell the movie, really. Like, and they're not in it a lot, but what they're given is pretty substantial. But it has creature feature, it has those parental figures that are creepy, and then it has a home invasion aspect to it. It's got a lot of little things going on. And this is kind of from the team that brought you Barbarian, so you can see, you know, that vibe is there. But it's cool. I'm not going to talk about what the dangerous, creepy tapping secret is, but it is really interesting when you find out what it is, and it's cool. It's a really good movie, and things aren't happening like you think they are. And there's the house that they live in is very creepy. They do a good job of the setting, and their backyard is covered in a pumpkin patch, and there's a secret in the pumpkin patch or two or whatever. But it's got that Halloween kind of creepy thing going on. But it's a very cool movie. I ended up picking it up, and I watched some of the making of, because I wanted to see like how they did certain shots and practical effects and stuff, and it's pretty cool. But you should definitely check it out when you get a chance, Bub.
Yeah, that's definitely one on the list, like, for sure.
Yeah, this is one of those that it fits that fall season really well, and it's kind of one that if it's Halloween time, I would pull out and watch. I watched it again this last Halloween because I think it came out like in the middle of summer, which is very odd. But yeah, so definitely check it out. It did really well enough for people to have conversations about how interesting it was. And yeah, so I'm curious to see what will come of it. So all right, so what's your next one?
Okay, so my next one's a little weird one, and I'm not sure if this made your list or if you checked it out. So it's Infinity Pool, number 2, Infinity Pool, directed by Brandon Cronenberg. So this one's one of those like quasi horror movies. I dig like all his stuff. He's probably, other than like David Eggers and Ari Aster, I would say he's probably like my favorite new director. Like as you know, I'm like a big fan of his father, obviously, but I feel like Brandon is kind of carving out his own really, really like strong filmography, like up to this point. And this movie is like really weird and like really, you kind of need to see it a couple times to even like start to even put it together. And I haven't really totally put it together. I don't know if anybody really can, or like, you know, there's just a lot of themes going on. And
yeah,
but just a basic synopsis. James and M. Foster are enjoying an all-inclusive beach vacation in the fictional island of La Tocla when a fatal accident exposes the resort's perverse subculture of hedonistic tourism, reckless violence, and surreal horrors. Did you check this out?
I did. I watched it on, I think it was on Hulu or one of the streamers. I did watch it. I know that there is a like a super unrated cut out there now. I didn't watch that version, but I did watch it. I did not like it. I do appreciate that type of movie, even though it's not the type of subgenre that I typically like. And I think that what Brandon Cronenberg does, and that's why I haven't really found any of his movies to be enjoyable yet.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate that space in horror, because I know they're, like his father, had that space in a way. But his is a little different, which is kind of cool too, right? But yeah, I didn't like it, but I did appreciate some of the aspects. Like, I like the ideas of it. Like, it kind of reminded me of, like, Turistas or mm-hmm. Hostel type of fare. But
This is also like, so this movie came out, you know, and we can kind of see, you know, if you just look at the headlines, you can kind of see some of the themes of this movie, like,
yeah,
do ramifications really exist for the elite or people with any kind of money, any kind of real money?
Yeah.
And it also explores themes, you know, related to identity, like I said, morality, hedonism. It's, you know, like what happens when we have or expect, you know, like no ramifications at all for our actions. And we can just kind of, there's also like a cool thing going on with masks in this movie, and like some, maybe even like cultural appropriation thrown in, because these characters show up and they're tourists, and obviously like on a poor like island, and they buy these masks that are fucking like grotesque and horrifying. And what the cool thing about the masks is, like, when they put them on, they feel like they can kind of transform and become really like the asshole, that like the killing asshole that they want to be, like that animalistic. It makes it easier to like shed their human sides and, you know, get rid of their compassion, and just allow them to do like really fucked up stuff. And but yeah, this movie has a ton to say about hedonism, violence, you know, just like, it was just like, it's really, it's not like a light watch.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, I don't know. A lot of people probably wouldn't like this, because it is like pretty pessimistic. It's kind of like,
yeah,
it's really a pessimistic kind of view of like human, like being a human or being or morality.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Squid Games, like not the reality one that they have on Netflix, which we did watch that one too, which is still creepy in its own way. But we watched the scripted version of Squid Games, and there are moments in that, in this movie, that reminded me of that, which mm-hmm. are uncomfortable. I think the conversations that come from this movie are interesting. And I think the themes, like you mentioned before, about the elites having that different space in society, I think that's always an interesting faction of any horror movie or any movie in general, because you see how their world really is different. I think all that worked for what they were achieving. And I think it's creepy thinking of it, because if you're not an elite and you, then, you know, what are you, you know, could you come across these people? You know what's going to happen, right? And
yeah,
so I think that is creepy. I think, like I've mentioned before, I'm not a big fan of nihilistic movies. Like, I do like a little bit of catharsis, and it doesn't give you that. And
no.
And especially no. That the ending is a little, it's one of those endings that I have frustrations with, because uh-huh. I hate non-endings sometimes, even though there is an ending.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I figured this one would be on your list. I was going to ask you if you'd watched it, because it wasn't one that I was going to recommend, but I was hoping that you would talk about it, because there are a lot of horror fans that would dig this movie.
Yeah, yeah. This is like, and one of the most unnerving scenes is like, so basically like kind of a spoiler alert, like when they get charged with a crime or whatever, I can't remember exactly how it goes down, but like they create like a duplicate or whatever, or like a body double kind of thing.
Right.
And one of the most unnerving scenes in the movie is when like they're watching their body doubles get put to death for their crimes. And they're like eating and like, I think they're like eating and laughing like maniacally. Right. Cause they're like, punish someone, but punish someone other than me, you know, punishment's fine, but it's not going to be me kind of thing. But, yeah, man, I don't know. I love his shit. I will say this. I don't think that it's as strong as Possessor. Like Possessor is one of my favorite movies in the past, like decade. Like I fucking love that movie.
I do like that one more than this one, even though I have issues with it in different ways, but I think the ideas there are a little more interesting. Because they are abstract, but they're not really abstract.
Yeah.
I think that was one that, if I was going to pick anything from his filmography, that would be the one that I'd be like, you should watch this movie for showcasing who he is as a storyteller and director.
Also, if you ever come across Mia Goth, run away. Mia Goth is never good to come across in any movie.
You know who she reminds me of? I don't know what it is about her, but as an actress, she kind of reminds me of Piper Laurie.
Yeah.
There's just something sinister about her all the time.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. She's really, really good.
Yeah. She's good in that. I'm curious to see if Maxine's going to come out this year,
mm-hmm.
2024, kind of close that trilogy. But so that was your number two.
That was my number two. Yeah.
All right. So I don't know if you've seen this one or not. I think I asked you. There will be some that I leave off my list, and I'll explain why. But this one...
Wait, is this your number one or is this your number two?
This is my number two.
Okay.
So this one is Totally Killer. This one is pretty much on brand for what I like in horror movies. But I'll read the synopsis. 35 years after the shocking murders of three teens, the infamous Sweet 16 killer returns on Halloween night to claim the fourth victim. When 17-year-old Jamie comes face to face with the masked maniac, she accidentally time travels back to 1987, forced to navigate the unfamiliar culture. Jamie teams up with her teenage mother to take down the psycho once and for all. The mask, I thought it was funny that to create the mask, like, you know, William for Halloween mask. They took inspirations from 80s actors Kiefer Sutherland, Dolph Lundgren, and Johnny Bravo, which is funny because he looks like all three of them. So this one is I think works in a lot of ways for me that I like. It's brutal and gory when it needs to be. There's a mask killer, which is always like, who's behind the mask, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's that 90s slasher, teen slasher vibe where you're introduced to groups of teens in different decades. So you have the Gen Zers in the present time. And then imagine going back to this time period, 1987. Imagine being a Gen Zer, for one, and then being in the 80s, right? In the decadence and in the anything goes, like, we don't care if we offend you kind of generation kind of thing. So it's interesting because that dynamic is in it. Like, there's one particular scene where I think is hilarious where this young girl, she goes into the police station in the 80s to report a crime, and she has evidence, and the cops are looking at her like, well, why would we, what would we do with that? Like, come on, you know, like, are you serious? And like the things that they say, she's like, wait, you can't say that. And they're like, well, why not? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's those little bits of dialogue that I think are so clever, because you see how different generations are with each other now. And having her go back to team up with her mom, who is one of those popular mean girls. And, she's not that, you know, so it's kind of fun. It's really stabby and bloody when it needs to be. And that's what I liked about it, because it wasn't a PG-13 slasher movie. And the motives for the killer or killers is really fun. And it has one of my favorite new set pieces. It's a killer stalking somebody in a Gravitron. And I thought that was kind of cool. Have you seen this one?
I have not, no.
It's really fun. I think you and Rose would really like it. It's one of those that totally came off the radar. It went straight to Amazon. It didn't come out in theaters. Surprisingly, I think it could have done really well because it's fun. It's like kind of in line with like Happy Death Day and Freaky, but it's also got that Scream element to it as well. And it's a little more, there's a little bit more going on for it. The funny comedy bits work. So I think you should check it out. Like I said, it's on Amazon Prime, and it's called Totally Killer. So definitely. All right, so that's my number two. So far I have had Sick for number five, four for Megan, three for Cobweb, and two for Totally Killer. Bub, do you want to go back and redo what you did, or re-say what you had, and then give us your number one?
Yeah, so number five, Scream 6, number four, Megan, number three, Talk to Me, and number two, Infinity Pool. And number one is a movie that we've been looking forward to for quite some time. And that is Thanksgiving, directed by Eli Roth.
And that's my number one, too.
Yeah. So we can jointly talk about it. And there's really like it's a throwback to classic 80s slashers, man. I said, like, I texted you like as soon as we saw this, I texted you and was like, dude, it's like, it's up there with like My Bloody Valentine, the original, and like, you know, Rosemary's Killer, and like, you know, just think like classic slasher formula. And it's like the movie that I wanted. Like, yes. And I don't know what that says about me or like fandom in general, but it's like what I wanted in this movie, like Eli Roth delivered. And I can't always say that because I haven't like loved all of his movies, but he just like knocked this out of the park, dude. It is like so fun. It has innovative kills. Like it is what it is with the story. It's like, it's a classic setup. It's like a revenge kind of slasher movie, like the early 80s. There's no really like, there's no like new kind of like overcomplicated bullshit, like kind of like not to rag on like, you know, the Black Christmas remake or anything like that, but it's like they just got too complicated with it. It's like this is just like a bare bones, like, you know, just classic slasher formula, yeah, slasher movie. I thought that it was going to remind me of, like, you know, Scream, or like, you know, just like poke fun at itself. And it didn't really do that. Like, it's just like a, like I said, like a bare bones kind of recipe for classic slasher. And like I said, I was like, that's like a fucking perfect slasher movie.
Yeah. Like, when I started watching it, I kind of thought it was going to go meta 90s.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because I have, you know, Sick and Totally Killer on my list. Like, those are still my comfort slasher foods, because I was a teen when those were out. So those were my golden age of slashers. But 80s is a whole different thing. And you're not aware, you're not that self-aware of horror movies and things like that in those movies. So I appreciated that, like, wasn't part of the plot or anything in this movie. Like, I liked that these were a group of kids that were current, but not like Scream group of kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They weren't.
I was waiting for the other shoe to drop as far as like the jokey shit. Like, I was kind of expecting it to be like really jokey and like really like kind of, like you said, self-referential and like, oh, look what we're doing here kind of thing.
Right.
But the killer is just like, and I was expecting the killer to be like tripping all over himself and shit. It could have really went like wrong or like went the wrong way. But like, the killer is a fucking force. He's scary. Like, you know, like I said, the kills are inventive. Like, he just like knocked out of the park, man.
And he likes cats.
Yeah. The Tim Dillon scene.
Well,
so yeah, Tim Dillon, great comedian. He's just like, hey, where is he? Like, asking his cat where the killer is.
I was reading up a little bit of the trivia, and the waitress is actually a direct descendant of the real John Carver, which I thought was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. And for any of you listeners that don't know who John Carver is, if you're looking from outside of the United States, he is one of the pilgrims who was on the maiden voyage and settled and became, you know, the governor of the Plymouth colony, which that's why the John Carver character is such an integral part of Plymouth, Massachusetts. So really, the fact that Eli Roth found somebody to put in this movie as a John Carver, you know, inspired killer, I thought was pretty fun. But it is all those things you said. It is. It's clever in the sense of it being not one of those that has to reveal all these twists, or it has to have all of these self-referential things. And it's a straight up revenge tale. And I thought that the set piece in the Rite Mart or whatever that Walmart place was, I thought that was terrifying and brutal and funny. It was like all those things at once. Like, I was like laughing so loud when some things were happening. And then I was like, my mouth was open, like, holy shit, these people are nuts. And then, you know, it was a cool way to like set up a revenge tale. And even though you can kind of figure out what's going on, there are some lines at the end with the motive that I'm like, that was kind of awesome, because it wasn't just a killer. Like, the plot was there, but there was some help that was needed in a way. And I thought that was kind of clever in that it wasn't, you know, multiple killers like you can see in movies like that. Like, it was very 80s. But yeah, I mean, soundtrack was killer.
Well, and I was going to say, like, even like, there's referential stuff, but like, there's like cool referential stuff for like fans of slasher movies. Like, for instance, Lynn Griffin's in it, and she was in, you know, Black Christmas and Curtains. It's just like, you know, just like little stuff like that. There was a couple nods to, like I said, like earlier slasher movies, like My Bloody Valentine in particular, and like Graduation Day. Like, there's just a lot of that kind of stuff.
And I love that set piece in the school where he's chasing the main character.
Yeah, it's great, man.
Really cool. And even with like the way that they're showing like her eyes and her face, like in that shot, it looks so classic prom night kind of.
Yeah.
It's just, it was cool. And the killer, like, the killer has that icon status because not only the look, but just that whole set piece with the turkey kill, or, you know, the killing, the baking in the oven as a turkey kind of.
Oh yeah.
Like that scene was really awesome. Like that's, and it was brutal. But yeah, I mean, it's everything we asked for, and I did not expect it to be as good as it was. So, I mean, number one's on our list. We're slasher fans. Anything else you want to talk about Thanksgiving, or you want to give some of your ones that you didn't really put on your list, but you thought you would mention?
So I think that there's a few that are worth mentioning. So, and the biggest one that I left off my list barely was Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
That one was like a tough cut for me, man. But right. it almost made my list like in several spots. Directed by Lee Cronin. Of course, produced by, you know, Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi and, you know, the rest of the series crew. I really, really dug that one. I thought that it's a weird series because there's really like no bad film in the whole entire series.
No.
It's high rise horror, which I always love. Reminded me a lot of like Demons 2.
Yep.
It kind of like, in my mind, it kind of bridged the original series and like Fede Alvarez's like remake, reimagining, whatever you want to call it, in terms of like tone. It's still gory as hell. It barely missed my list. Like if I were to do this list like next week or the week after, you know, who knows, it maybe edges out one of them, but like, I felt like the performances were great. The gore was great. And I love like movies set in, you know, high rise settings. That like Evil Dead Rise and The Last Voyage of, is it Demeter or
Demeter?
Yeah. So I finally checked this one out.
I like that one.
Yeah. This one's really good too. And I think like, I remember you saying that you went to see it in theaters, right?
Yeah.
And I just checked this one out like a couple weeks ago. I think it's streaming on one of the streamings, Hulu or Peacock, one of the two. But I really dug this one. I thought that the creature effect, like the idea for the vampire or whatever, is, I felt like, was a cool little twist on, you know, his look and like how he was just kind of like a fucking terrorizing creature. The idea of it being like the one chapter out of Dracula and what happens to the crew and stuff. But yeah, this one kind of like, I didn't check it out for the longest time. And yeah, it really kind of surprised me at how much I did like it.
And it has one of those brutal kills where it's like kids are not spoken for. Like it can be brutal when it needs to be, and about it, because it is a monstrous creature in it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like that one. I left off, you know, the ones that you did, one that was on Shudder that I think you would enjoy. It's more of a low key, slow burn, kind of plays more like a play, like a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, it's more of like the effects of war, but there is a supernatural aspect, and it's called Brooklyn 45, and it has Michael Fassbender in it. Really good cast. And it's about these veterans that are, you know, the war, World War II is over. And they're going to one of the, their veteran friends for Christmas. And they get stuck in this house, kind of like, have you ever watched the movie, which I haven't seen it, but I've heard, Assassinating Angel, I think it is.
No, I don't think I've checked that out.
But that's from a movie from the 40s, but it's basically like a dinner party and people can't leave, and this is kind of similar, but it raises a lot of questions about, you know, the effects of war, specifically for that time, patriotism and the outsiders, and in this case it's the Germans that are in America, right, that are, would be the outsiders then, because you're coming off of Nazi war. It's not outright brutal but it is what it needs to be. And the ending is a super gut punch. And I think that's why it's one that, you know, you definitely should check out, Brooklyn 45. Another one that I didn't put Godzilla Minus One because
That's one that I was going to ask you about. Why didn't that crack the list?
So that one didn't, because even though I wanted to put it on my list so bad, it really is a terrific best of movie of, for me, it's my favorite movie of 2023, hands down, all around. Godzilla is a monster and he's terrifying again, but the movie is more of a war movie. And I think that's where I was conflicted. I wanted to put outright horror movies on my list.
Yeah.
All of our lists are horror, pretty much horror. You know, there's nothing really, even Infinity Pool, I think, is a horror movie in every way. Yeah. This one is, it's got a lot of different elements. It's got horror. It's got mostly a war movie, and there is that sci-fi element to it. And so that's why I didn't put it on my list, but it's definitely, it's not only the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen. I haven't seen a couple like Shin Godzilla, but it's the best Godzilla movie I've seen. And it's probably the best movie I've seen in a few years, to be honest, other than the Batman, maybe. Like, it's just, it's so good. You know, you'll cry, you'll cheer. There's a section where I was like ready to stand up and clap. Like, it is engaging as hell. I did not expect that, but it is Japanese Toho made. So, you know, it does make the American movies seem a little like, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic. I do have a couple more. Killer Book Club on Netflix. It's a Spanish 90s teen slasher. They use the concept of Scream, but instead of horror movies, it's books. And I think you and listeners would like it if you haven't seen it. It's a fun watch. It's a reader, so you do have to read it if you don't know Spanish. It's A Wonderful Knife, I think, it's not the best of, but it was a fun watch, if anything, just for the concept. It deals with, you know, suicide, you know, and like what would happen if I wasn't around, and you see what happens when just one person is not in the equation. And so I like that aspect to It's a Wonderful Knife, but also I think the killer in it is just it's brutal, but it's also kind of fun. That's on Shudder as well. And one that I wasn't even sure I would probably get groans from, but I just think it worked so well, is The Doom That Came to Gotham.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that one, but that is an Elseworlds tale. It's adapted from the actual comic graphic novel. And it's very Lovecraftian, very much John Carpenter's The Thing. And it's, the characters are Gotham, you know, characters, Batman and some villains, but it is pretty much an animated horror movie, and it's very cool. So I almost put that on my list because I was like, should this be there? But I didn't, but definitely check that out when you can. It's on HBO Max.
One other little note, we talked about it a little bit, but just to give it another little plug here, I really did feel like Saw X was a very solid movie. Like, that'd probably make my top 10. It just didn't quite make my top 5, but I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I didn't put it on my list either, and it could easily be there. I think honestly, it's probably the best Saw movie, to be honest. I mean, thinking of like the plot and like seeing Jigsaw in action with Amanda, and like you get more of them together, which I always thought was the heart of the series.
Yeah.
You didn't really get that in the other sequels, and it's more of a revenge tale, and that's what I thought worked. There was a lot of movies. I'll be curious to see what you think of some of the ones on Shudder that you haven't got to check out. When Evil Lurks is another one that I showed Gabe the other day, and he was in until he wasn't in. I'm in for it, though, because it is brutal, and it is definitely, like you were talking about, Talk to Me earlier, being a flip on the exorcism kind of thing. This one, I think, is way flipping the exorcism story on its head. And I don't know if you checked out his other movie, the director's, called Terrified.
Yeah, that one was fucking creepy, man.
Yeah, that one's on Shudder. You can check it out. When Evil Lurks is on Shudder. You got actually quite a bit. Shudder really killed it. It's a Wonderful Knife, Brooklyn 45, that one. There's another one on there called Attachment that was really good. And VHS 85 was really good on there too, for this year, or 2023. So I'm curious to see, you know, where the streamer horror movies will be for 2024. But yeah, that's quite a bit. That's a lot of, lot to recommend. I know that you started the episode not really sure how you felt about 2023, but I think if you watch some more of the low key ones, I think you'll think of it differently.
Yeah, for sure. That, like, when what is it called? When Evil Lurks is, like, definitely one of those that I'm gonna check out, like, immediately, because, like I said, I've heard so much shit about it, like, you know, just being awesome and really pushing boundaries and being like a very uncomfortable watch, and that's like right up my alley.
That one is, if you want fun date night, It's a Wonderful Knife or Killer Book Club, but mm-hmm. Brooklyn 45 and When Evil Lurks is probably more for you, more your style. It's a little more nihilistic, but I mean, and then I went through a list of a lot of, you know, theatrical releases, streaming ones, but there were some movies that came out just to DVD, and there was one called All Fun and Games, and I don't even know where you can watch it. It might be on Hulu, maybe, or Tubi, but it was a fun little horror movie. It didn't do much, and it's not really something that I would put on any list, but it was just one of those, like, oh, that, I didn't even know that was kind of coming out, and when it did, it kind of made a little bit of an impression. And I like those too, that are just kind of hidden little gems. But this is packed episode. So Trav, the question I have for you, are you going to be coming out with any more Horrifying My Friends episodes? Or are you kind of waiting in the sidelines to see where the podcast life is going?
So yeah, I have thought about it a little bit, and yeah, I think we're definitely going to come back at some point. Like I said, the 2023, the year was not kind, but I'm not sure about weekly, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, I'm excited for you to at least come back on the show, and listeners can find you, you know, online. You're on.
Oh yeah.
All the social medias. You can check out Fatal Follower Presents, a podcast on Facebook and Horamino, and you can reach out to me at fatalfollowerpresents@gmail.com. Trav, it was great having you back on the show. It's been a long time coming, and I appreciate you taking the time to geek out with me about 2023 and 2024 horror.
Oh, hell yeah. And I will say, like, I think a good show for the immediate future, maybe give it a couple weeks, is like the best reads of 2023. Like, because I think that there's, even though I thought that the some of the movies were lacking, like, I think 2023 was a pretty strong year for horror, like novels and short story collections and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Are you currently reading any novels or anything right now?
So I am, I just got What Kind of Mother by Chapman. And he did a Whisper Down the Lane. And, you know, like one of my favorite novels, I'm actually rereading it right now, is How to Sell a Haunted House.
Oh, that's
dude, it's fucking, it's so good.
And that's good too, which I'm curious to see how that will look.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. There's a lot of good shit though this year, man, like novels and comics. So that'll be an interesting show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, I love How to Sell a Haunted House. It's so good. I did not expect it to be as good as it was. I'm currently reading Fairy Tale from Stephen King. I started a couple days ago, and it's not my typical go-to for Stephen King. I don't think, like, if I want to read Stephen King, it's usually like a classic or something like that. It's not like drama or like fantasy, but I went ahead and did it because I was trying something new, and I am super engaged with it. I did not expect it to be as good as it is. It's really good. It's kind of like, I've never read the Harry Potter books, but I've watched the movies. So if I'm thinking of it, it's so far, I don't know if this is the way it's going to be. It's sort of that young adult fantasy by way of Stephen King. You know what I mean? So it's like if Harry Potter was plucked out of Harry Potter universe and put in like Stand By Me or something. So it's
interesting.
Yeah. It's not something I would think, it's hard to explain, but it's pretty cool. But yes, we definitely need to talk more horror book reads. And with that, I wish you all a happy new year. For the show, I'm not sure if I was doing one a month. I don't know how I will get back to that, but I will be releasing these as we find interesting topics come out. And again, thank you, Trav, and we will bid you adieu.
Adieu.